Blog Talk Radio.
There you go.
And yay!
This That's not very is all about wine.
All about wine.
Dedicated to the wine industry since 2009, featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine
doesn't sound very loud
and more friendly.
No, it doesn't. I'm just adjusting my sound here.
We have had some unique people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And now, All About Wine
is
here's Ron.
I didn't have the volume up. I had to adjust the volume.
I was adjusting mine here too. I'm going, what's wrong with this day? Right.
No, we're here.
No, okay.
Welcome
to figure out.
All About Wine. Yeah, open to everybody.
Hope you all been listening to Mike's show. Saturday mornings, 10 to noon, Flightline Radio. Yeah. At flightlineradio.com, and then right after that, a replay,
Encore, I think.
Encore, thank you. That's the word I was looking for. An encore presentation of All About Wine. So if you are never able to listen to it on Thursday evenings, you can always tune in to Flightline Radio on Saturdays at noon. And then Flightline Radio streams 24/7. You see classic rock and a few things here and there other than that. And some of the classic rock is not like you will listen to your local radio station, classic rock radio station, because they play the same, 50, 7,500 at the most songs over and over again.
Nah,
I don't think so. I think maybe 25 to 50 over and over again. Mike plays songs off of, let's say the Deja Vu album by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. Play some tracks on there that you never hear on the radio. He'll play odd tracks there. And same thing with other artists from the 80s and 70s and 60s that you normally don't hear. So it's a good listen. So 24/7.
I might have to tune into that myself. Thank you. I'm changing, adding some more that I've got on my library now. It's expanding, so I'm going to put some more on rotation. But I also wanted to add that the 1st and 15th now follows All About Wine on Saturday.
Oh, really?
So,
okay.
Yes. They are on 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. on Wednesdays, and then following and it was really a fluke thing, because I was redoing something in the background, and I said, okay, I'm not going to be done in time after the wine show. What I need to put something up there, so I just moved their scheduled time, and I go, it rolled into it. So I thought, okay, we'll just leave it like that for a bit.
So there you go. 1st and 15th is really a lot of fun. You all want a good chuckle. That's really a good listen there.
Yeah, and they talk about everything. It's very it's entertaining. And sometimes I'm driving to work and I'm like, what are they saying? What is
that? Oh, it's like Seinfeld. If you remember the show Seinfeld, for anyone out there, it's like Seinfeld. Yep. They don't really talk about anything. It's a show about nothing, but it's hilarious. So
that is a very good description. It's Seinfeld.
It's a fun show. So tune in noon, and then after that, say 1 mm-hmm. o'clock or somewhere around there. A little after, you have the 1st and 15th that will come on. But Mike's
right.
before that from 10 to noon. So if you have any special requests or anything, then he's there to talk, to chat with you on instant.
Chat line's called.
And chat line, So there you go. That's
thank you.
Talk about that first. Then the next thing I want to mention is you all know I'm a sports fan, and this Sunday's the Super Bowl. So,
Wait, can we say that on there?
maybe we should say the big game. Okay. We haven't got permission to say Super Bowl, so we got to say the big game.
You just did it again.
Yeah. The big game. Always cracks me up. Yeah. I watch shows and they go, the big game is, I go, oh, geez. Sunday. Super Bowl is going to be on. It's going to be the San Francisco 49ers against the Kansas City Chiefs in Las Vegas. It's an evening game. I think it kickoffs at 6:30. If you are into sports, watch it on whatever channel is carrying it. You can see the advertisements and everything, which starts about half hour before. And you're not hearing too much about the advertisements this year. I mean, previous years, you used to hear a whole bunch about the advertisements coming on. But the amount of money they spend, and so a lot of companies put their money into the Super Bowl, and then they divide that advertisement up into segments throughout the next 6 months instead of showing the whole advertisement. But I've mentioned before, I'm from Kansas City. I'm a Kansas City fan. I like to see Kansas City win. But I've always been sort of, I lived in outside of San Francisco for many, many years, and so I became a 49ers fan. I haven't really lost that that heartfelt feeling for San Francisco. So if Kansas City wins, yay. If San Francisco wins, then it's only one yay. But still, I'm not going to be real real depressed about it. But the advertisement and everything. But if you're not a sports fan, watch the Super Bowl on Nickelodeon. It's still going to show the football game, but they do so many different stuff on there. They have the great big Yeti. They impose it into the crowd, and Yeti's walking around the crowd. They have Yeti on the field. They have slime. They slime players. They slime the audience. The crowd, all this stuff. Of course, it's on the field. It's not real slime, but they slime people, and they the announcers that I saw in the game earlier this season, they played a game on a playoff or something, and the announcers I saw really didn't sit there and start telling you about each player and all that stuff. They talked about other things, and but it really was an interesting take on the normal sports show, especially something like Super Bowl. So if you're looking at still seeing the game, but getting a little bit different than the commentator sitting there trying to, that player is playing with a lot of physicality, which drives me nuts when they say physicality. But, and hearing stuff like that. And he came into play today. Well, they all came into play. Okay. I mean, it's a Super Bowl. But
exactly. The sideline reporter, it's the same thing every time they coach comes back from halftime or something. Coach, what are you going to do differently in this that's going to win the game? Well, to win the game, we're going to have to score more touchdowns and keep that run going.
A little bit stronger defense.
Yeah. I didn't realize that was what the game was all about. And it's every single, what are you going to do differently? Well, we're going to try and score more touchdowns, and we're going to do this and run the field. Wow.
All right. Thanks for your time, Coach.
wow, that was so insightful. Now I totally understand what you have to do. But I thought that was a whole part of the game. And then they, yeah. and like you were talking about, the announcers in the booth, and they say the exact same thing every single time. It's like, you know, oh, this guy's, you know, this player so-and-so, and, you know, he's doing this. And it's like, yeah, oh, and he's going to run up the middle. Well, of course he did. You know, I mean, come on. That's
we're watching. One of the most enjoyable games I ever saw was one where the announcers just shut up and let us watch the game. And that was But Nickelodeon is a good alternative. And Nickelodeon had a – had a game on, I think it was a playoff game. I want to say it was a playoff game. And it was really enjoyable because they would slime the crowd. They would slime players. They, you know, a player did something and they would slime him. And I mean, they had Yeti walking around. And but it, yet all this was superimposed on the screens. But it was... it was all superimposed on the screen. But it was it was really, really hilarious. And I'm pretty sure that they are going to be doing the Super Bowl Sunday evening. So you're not... don't think you're going to be seeing the advertisements. But it is an enjoyable game. Or you can always tune in to the Puppy Bowl, too. This is, I think, the 25th or 26th Puppy Bowl. That's going to be on. But a good alternative, Nickelodeon, I think, for those who are not real big football fans, but yet you want to watch the game. That's the way to go. Yeah. And so,
absolutely. You mentioned 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 3:30 p.m. Pacific Time. It's Allegiant Stadium. I'm just going by memory. TV channels is CBS. And if you don't want to do the pay route, get yourself an aerial antenna, old fashioned, and just pick up a local CBS station for free. That'll work. Streaming on Paramount Plus. For mobile, it's on NFL Plus. That is this Sunday, February the 11th. There's also, what are some of the other ones? Nickelodeon, you mentioned, Philo, which is I believe it's a subscription, channel, but, anyway, Usher is going to be performing in the Super Bowl halftime, pop star. He's there. And let's see, the national anthem is going to be by Reba McEntire. What else? Post Malone will provide his rendition of America the Beautiful. And R&B artist Andra Day will perform Lift Every Voice and Sing at the game. So
That might be good. I read something interesting on the internet. It was a letter that was being passed around, but the letter says, I am, sergeant or lieutenant or whatever it was, stationed overseas. And it was an open letter. And he said, whoever sings the Super Bowl this year or any sporting event, don't make it your own. Sing it like it was written. All of us military personnel around the world, especially on the Super Bowl, is going to be watching that. We want to listen to the national anthem the way it was written and the way it's supposed to be sang. We don't want to listen to some crazy approach to the thing. We want to just have you sing the song. And I thought, that's a good point. I mean, you know, all these artists that get on there and you know, their own. It's not your own. It's the national anthem. Okay.
Right. Totally agree with that for sure.
That just is crazy. One other sporting comment is a week from today, the 15th, the pitchers and catchers report to spring training. Mm-hmm. So in Florida and Arizona, is where they all report. So we got the boys of summer coming up here in a week. Pitchers and catchers report next Thursday on the 15th. And then I think 3 days later or something like that, or 5 days later, I don't know, the rest of the team reports. So we're getting getting the baseball guys back together again, ready for another season of baseball under the lights and under the sun, I suppose, both. But that's always fun. I enjoy baseball, too. So I don't think they've done any crazy rule changes this year like they have in the past. I don't know. I still want to go back to the baseball the way it was originally made, not all these different rule changes they've passed over the years. I'm not just talking about this last year, but, you know, designated hitters and stuff like that. I like it when the pitcher has to come up to bat. It's a strategy. It makes the manager manage. Yeah. So. But, Okay. So, killing some time here. I played golf today and I didn't get back home until just a little bit before showtime. And I was thinking we had a guest. We don't. Or else they would have called in by now. So I have been I looked at a few things that were talked about, but I have different things here. And let me go through and I'll look at them. If I see something interesting, I'll pop it up and talk to you about it. Which, these are from Wine Industry Network. I get this in my box every day. And there's a lot of great stuff in it, a lot of great information in it. And they have videos, and they have news, and they have blogs and job postings, and they have stories about the people in the wine industry and supplier news and vineyard and winery news. And here's a Unified Symposium Exhibitors Guide for the Unified Wine and Grape Symposium Exhibitors Guide for 2024, which is coming up, which is passed. Well, this is no one anyway. Back in January, end of January this was. All sorts of stuff on this thing here. And then they always have a video at the bottom of this. But that's where I get most of my news. And it's usually really up-to-date, pretty interesting. But what I have here is... let's see, this first one. Willamette Valley's so-called Blosser, B-L-O-S-S-E-R, announced that they were adding an ingredients list to its wine labels. Everybody's been avoiding that, but except for, you know, I think I mentioned last week or week before about New England, or England, not New England, but England doing it. But the so-called Blosser change starts with the winery's just released 2023 Estate Rosé of Pinot Noir. And it says, the ingredients list for the winery's 2023 Estate Rosé reads simply, quote, 100% Estate Pinot Noir grapes, yeast, SO2, end quote. The label also includes servings per container, calories per serving, 115, carbohydrates, 3.5, fat, 0, and protein, 0. That's it. But it's an ingredients list. You know, it contains Pinot Noir grapes, yeast, and SO2, which every single ingredient list would have to contain SO2, because I think just about everybody uses it. He also said, the Silco Blosser says there are practical reasons for doing this. Is some of the people on their team have diabetes, and anytime they put something in their body, it really depends on the carbs and the sugar, and they need this information. So he decided that he would do it. And the TTB, Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau, has a long list of approved substances that can be added to wine. And so, you know, you can go through and look at that list and say, okay, this is the maximum that can be added. He said, but it's just so much better. It puts it on there just so people can see, and if they can make their own decision about it. Starts with the winery's new rosé, and he says he's going to continue it with other wines that are going to be released in the spring and throughout the year, and continue to do so. So, yeah, actually, that's a pretty simple list. That's something that's not going to have to change. This is something I've always been concerned about, is cost of new labels every time something happens. So with a list like this, it should be pretty simple to keep the labels about the same all the time. But there is the first that you're going to see, and I'm sure that over time we're going to see more and more and more wines with ingredient labels on them and stuff like that. So, okay, let me go back and see what else we've got here. Wine range and Tommy Durst. Michigan's recent cold snap. This report was done a couple weeks ago. And so Michigan's cold snap, although they got cold hardy grapes up there, which really doesn't affect them, except when it gets really cold. And they're saying that the key metric for cold hardiness is the lethal temperature 50. Let's see, this temperature signifies the point at which 50% of the primary buds are killed in midwinter. And so, there you go. Latest freezing tolerance assessment for common vinifer grape varieties in northwest Michigan. And this is interesting because most of these are grapes that we are familiar with. The variety Riesling, the coldest it can handle is minus 4.9 degrees Fahrenheit, or 20.5 minus 20.5 Celsius. Merlot can handle minus 18.8 Celsius or minus 1.84 Fahrenheit. Cabernet Franc can go as cold as minus 21.2 degrees Celsius or minus 6.16 degrees Fahrenheit. Pinot Noir, minus 19.3 Celsius or minus 2.74 Fahrenheit. And Chardonnay, minus 19.5 degrees Celsius or minus 3.1 Fahrenheit. Any longer than that, and they freeze. And they freeze the roots, and the plant dies. I mean, it's not like, oh, we won't have to worry about this. It'll survive. It won't. It will end up dying. Here's another good example. Cold hardiness class. Very tender grapes. There's a range of 5 degrees to minus 5 degrees, which is most of the Vitis vinifera. Examples of the ones that are susceptible at that temperature, Chenin Blanc, Merlot, Sauvignon, Syrah, Sauvignon Blanc, and Zinfandel. Ones that are tender, going from 0 to minus 8 degrees Fahrenheit, Chardonnay, Cabernet Sauvignon, Gewürztraminer, Pinot Gris, Pinot Noir, Sangiovese, and Viognier. Moderately tender, ones that can go survive at minus 5 to minus 15 degrees Fahrenheit. This is some of the Vitis vinifera and some hybrids. Riesling, Cabernet Franc, Gamay Noir, and Chambourcin. Moderately hardy, minus 10 to minus 15 degrees Fahrenheit. And this is most hybrids. You're done with the Vitis vinifera on this. Chardonnay, Traminet, Norton, and Vignole. Hardy grapes, minus 15 to minus 20. Most of the Vitis labrusca. Now, these are American grapes, Concord and Niagara, and then very hardy grapes. These are the ones that will survive minus 20 to minus 30 degrees Fahrenheit. And these are extended times. The temperature just go bounce down there and come back up. It's through the night. It sets in those temperatures for, you know, I think 3 hours, I think, is what the minimum. And some of the hybrids will survive this, Frontenac and Forche. So there are varying degrees of temperatures grapevines can handle. That's why University of Michigan, or Minnesota, and Cornell University have been doing a lot of cold grape research, wine grape research over the years. So it's in there, it tells you how to handle the, if you do get frozen grapevines, how you can prune and stuff like this. The article goes into that stuff. But cold damage can be devastating to grapevines, and that's why the, like I say, that's why they've been working on hybrids for such a long time. And it seems like American hybrids, or American grapes, tend to be much more cold hardy than the Vitis vinifera's. So, and they've been, you know, blending two, hybriding to try to come up with grapes that will survive and that people will like when it's made wine, which sometimes that's not always the case. Okay. Let's see, that's, this is basically the same article. No, this isn't. Catastrophic cold damage to wine grapes. Where was this? This is, Okanagan grape yield is down 54% because of cold. Okanagan, that's Canada? Yes, it is. Where I've heard of the valley, but I can't think of it. Maybe. Oh, I don't see it here. Oh, there we go. British Columbia. The serious cold snap in British Columbia growing region of Okanagan, and let's see, last event like was similar to this was in 1990. So the extent of vine trunk damage and death is high. It's like I said, they lost 54%. They're looking at a lot of grape vines lost, 35% loss of yield for certain grapes, and the grape yield for the harvest in 2023 is down by over half. Devastating cold snap up there. But we've had that cold Arctic air that's came all the way down here to Florida, and that has really affected grapevines throughout the country, actually. Okay. Let's see, this, let's see if this is, it says, archaeologists uncovered how wine likely looked, smelled, and tasted in ancient Rome. Is this a real long article? No, it isn't. I apologize for not being more prepared. I played golf there enough. I had a guess. So, it's well known that wine was an essential part of the Roman life, and many sources suggest that the Roman citizens were drinking about 100 gallons of wine per year. Wow. But how did it look and smell was a mystery until now. A new archaeological study of Roman pottery is providing some insights to it. Oh, my engineer is bringing me a wine. Yeah, what are you bringing me? This is a Pinot Noir but where is this from? This is like Spanish. Italy. No, an Italian Pinot Noir. Well, that's interesting. Well, we'll go back to this Roman wine after I tell you about this Italian Pinot Noir that I've got here. And they cute little scroll tied to the top of the bottle. This is a Vino del Amicizia. VinoDellAmicizia. I do not speak Italian, so I can probably destroy that for you. It's a Pinot Noir. It's 13% alcohol by volume. On the back, which is really cool, they've got Braille on the back, so you can, blind person can read what it is in the label on the back. Oh, well, that's super cool. Do they have it on the front? I never noticed it. No, they don't. Just on the back. It's a 2021 Pinot Noir. And it says medium body, taste is fruit driven, smooth and mild, goes with pizza, grilled meat, and vegetables. 13% alcohol, product of Italy. And what does this little paragraph say? A gem set in a small place of vine is the positive mark you are tasting the fruit born from the bud. We have been tying it to the neck of the bottle since the half of last century as guarantee that the entire and fascinating winemaking process from the grape to the glass is genuine. And well, they got the whole thing tied to the neck here, a little piece of paper tied to the neck. That's the guarantee that it's going to be genuine and authentic. So that's cool. I don't want to fool with that right now. So this is since 1957. It's even engraved in the bottle. It's embossed in the bottle. So let's see what this tastes like. Oh, a very nice aroma. Fruitiness to it. A hint of plumminess. Yeah, a little plum, some berries, blackberries, blueberry, bit of blueberry. Oh, that smells good. Let's see, let's look at the legs for those of you who are into that. I'm not getting a whole lot of legs on this. I'm not. That's odd. Very limited on the legs. Maybe if I swirl it more as I'm drinking it, it will show more. But right now, no. Okay, let's see what it tastes like. Oh. Do a second sip. Never judge it on the first. We all know that now. A little acidic. Not bad. Comes through with some good flavors, some good fruitiness flavors. The plum is lost on the taste. It's there in the nose, but it's lost on the taste. A little bit of tannin in it, but like the bottle said, it is light and fruity, and it is rather fruity. I can really make that out. Very nice. It's for a Pinot Noir, it's lighter and fruitier, and it's it says smooth and mild on the label. I agree with the mild, but the smooth, the little acid tends to jump in the way of that. So, but it doesn't carry over into the finish though. I mean, I'm Sometimes you drink a wine, the acid just gets you and stays with you. This one doesn't. You hit you on the tongue, and then in the aftertaste, it doesn't continue and stay there.
Yeah.
Well, the acid is really not as bad on that sip as it was initially either. So, well, there you go. And I'm still not getting any legs on this. That is unusual, especially for a Pinot Noir. You tend to get legs on a Pinot Noir. And this one's not showing any at all. That's interesting. Huh. Pleasant. Nice wine. If you're looking for a light Pinot Noir, something from Italy, it's reasonably expensive. I think we paid between 14 and 16 for that, or it may have been even a BOGO at the local shop. They do give us BOGOs. So, Vina del Amicizia. Amicizia? I don't know. Veneto. Pinot Noir. 2021. Right? 2021. Right. All right. Very good. She always surprises me with a wine during the show. So, okay. Let's go back. Here we go. A new archaeological study of Roman pottery is providing some insights into flavors and taste. As the shape of the Andolia appears similar to that of the quivery, the clay vessels used in Georgia, by burying the Andolia in the ground, D-O-L-I-A, I believe it's Andolia, temperature and pH could be controlled. And it also could, yeast gives the wine a slightly spicy flavor with aromas of toasted breads and walnuts. So there you go. Steel tanks are completely sealed, limiting oxygen, but the small holes in Doria allow oxygen throughout the fermentation. This can impart richness and complexity with flavors like roasted nuts and bruised apples. The mineral-rich nature of the clay also likely added a dry sensation to the wine. Bruised apples. I'm sorry. Why don't you just, you know, bruised apples. There's so many different types of apples, but, you know, why don't they just say Golden Delicious Apple or something like that. Bruised apples. Okay. Sorry. Some of that stuff drives me crazy. The discovery time is suggested and has substantial control over the final product. So the winemakers were really doing a thing back then as well as they do now. The unexpected parallels between modern and ancient winemaking lies in both debunking the alleged amateurishness of nature of the Roman winemaking and uncovering common traits in the vinification. So there you go. It's ancient. They're saying that ancient wines had a spiciness of toasted bread and walnuts in the flavor and bruised apples. So that's interesting. It wasn't just, you know, you would expect maybe it would be. Okay, let's see what else we've got here. Let's look at this one. Industry session looks at national challenges. No wine revision. Uber to lay off all Drizzly employees as Massachusetts-founded alcohol delivery app is shut down. This is interesting. It says Uber plans to lay off all the employees Uber purchased Drizly in early 2021 for $1.1 billion. Drizly, which serves more than 1,400 cities, grew to become North America's largest online alcohol marketplace. According to Uber, the app will officially shut down at the end of March. Wow. $1.1 billion to shut it down? Drizly and Uber submitted a Worker Adjustment and Retraining Act notice last week. According to the notice, 168 employees from the Boston-based app will be affected. Layoffs will occur between April 1st and September 1st. All Drizly positions are to be eliminated, as well as some support roles at Uber. An Uber spokesman said some Drizly team members will be offered roles within Uber supporting its beverage and alcohol service. Head of delivery for the Uber said, "We're grateful to the Drizly team for their many contributions to the growth of the Bev Alc delivery category as the original industry pioneers." And that's it. Bye-bye. So long. Farewell. Wow. Okay. So, in the Boston area, I guess it's what it sounded like. It's going to be national. If they bought the thing, they bought it for $0.1 billion in early 2021, and it serves 1,400 cities, and they're shutting it down. So I guess Drizly is going to be relegated to a thing of the past. Huh. Oh, that's strange. I do taxes, and I've done Drizly last year. Drizly's had a couple of people come in who their income was from Drizly. But I guess not after this year. Well, okay. So, no more Drizly as of September. That's going to be the end of it. And Paso Robles, land of the big reds, they're looking at trying to get lighter styles. Paso Robles does have some big, big red wines. It's just too big. Here, buy this and put it away for 50 years. Well, you know, I'm old. I'm not going to live 50 years. So, yeah. They do have some big, big reds up there. Let's see. State Senate in Virginia, West Virginia, Charleston, West Virginia. State Senate in West Virginia is looking at removing the criteria that wineries sell food in order to sell their wine. They're making it so that they can just sell wine, which is a good thing for a winery. Said the fairs and festivals element was designed to allow smoother operation of wine festivals, and so it will eliminates the requirement that the wine you sell food in order to sell wine. Also allows them to sell wine at fairs and festivals, and also give samples, glasses, and whole bottles. Allows the wineries to sell the samples rather than just give them away. So here, you want to do a tasting, their samples, it's going to cost you. So it helps the winery, it seems like, all the way around on something like this. They're going to end up coming out ahead if that bill passes. But it still has to go to the House. It's the Senate, the state Senate has passed it. Now it needs to go to the House. But it was passed 27-6. So good chance that it's going to pass the House. So if you're in West Virginia, you're going to not have to sit down and buy food. It's going to be so much easier for wineries, too. I mean, if I was... If I had to support a kitchen the whole time so I could sell my wine, oh my gosh, that would, wow. It's the cost factor because you'd have to be inspected and everything else and pass all that. So it's just, you know, would seem like it'd be so much easier. A new microeconomic impact report on the wine and brandy industry in South Africa shows it's being shackled by logistical issues at ports and because of a lack of action against the illicit alcohol trade, and also including rolling blackouts and disruptions due to geopolitical issues. So South Africa is having some problems politically, and it's affecting wineries or alcohol trade, actually, and the illicit alcohol trade in South Africa is making a impact on it too. So it's threatening livelihoods of winemakers and wineries, and also tourism, and also the economy in the area where there's wineries. So it's interesting problem going on in South Africa right now. So, okay, let's go to the next one here. This is up to date here. This one just came out today. So let's see what this has to say. The California bottle bill. I've mentioned this before, and it's the article here says experts untangle the super hella confusing California bottle bill. That was a quote from this here. Redemption for wine and spirits bottles in California, which is, like I said, it's the, you got to pay for your bottle when you purchase it. You got to pay for the bottle, then you have to turn it back in and get money back on it. They do this in a lot of stuff in California, but it's swinging over to wine bottles. And it says, and wine and spirits, I mentioned wine and spirits, is not just about getting new labels. Experts said at the January 23rd panel held in Sacramento, there are many other details to implement in the layers of requirements, some of which have yet to be determined, as they're still trying to sort it all out. Come on, if you're going to have a bill out there and you're going to make people follow it, then it should have been sorted out before it got to the point where they had to worry about it. I mean, you know, and it not just affects wineries, it affects you as a consumer too, if you're in California. The bill, the new bill, makes wineries responsible for labeling, tracking, reporting, and paying recycling fees. And based on the number of wine containers they sell, and it's crazy because they're going to have to raise prices on each of the bottles. Now, even if it raises a quarter a bottle, it's going to start affecting you and your pocketbook. I mean, this is absurd. California comes up with so many strange ideas, and they say it's for the environment. But, oh, look, we made more money into our state coffers anyway. But, you know, I live in California, believe me. I know how they work out there. Proposition 13, I think it was, that was passed when I was there. Proposition 13, if I remember correctly, I think it was 13. Way back when I lived in California, they passed this Proposition 13. They put it to the vote for the people, and people overwhelmingly vote for it, which lowered property taxes. Property taxes were climbing, I mean, every year by 12-15%. And this ball then put a cap on how much it could go up each year. And so it, like, put a halt to property tax increases that were out of hand. And so California said, okay, if you do that, then we're going to have to cut back on these services. We're going to have to cut back on buses. We're going to have to cut back on libraries. We're going to have to cut back on all sorts of different programs that we have and all that. And then people says, okay, we're getting tired of paying these outrageous property taxes. And so they passed it overwhelmingly, and they started cut back on stuff. And people said, oh, we can live with this. We're not paying tremendous amount of property taxes. And it ended up working. I still think after it's been enough years now, the property taxes are outrageous again. Even if they went up 5% a year, it's been a number of years since I've been there. So, but this is another one, though. This, they haven't even decided the QR codes yet. They're not sure what's going to happen with the QR codes. The whole thing's crazy. It's an ongoing fiasco. Fill you in on what's happening with this as time goes on. Let's see what else we got here. Sonoma Sister Winery in Hungary offers an internship at the winery. So if you speak Hungarian, there is a job for you there in Hungary. Let's see. Well, I saw something on this that was interesting. Oh, farmers. European Union farmers have been protesting some new rules in the European Union. And the executive arm shelved an anti-pesticide proposal, which was another concession to the farmers after weeks of protest that have blocked many of the streets and all that across the 27-nation block. Farmers have protested majorly, and all sorts of farmers, grape growers and all that stuff, because they have put in some really stringent rules and regulations in the EU. So I just lost my pinot noir. The engineer came and got it. She always does, though. She can't wait until I finish. She's got to have some more. Bulgarian farmers, for example, added more to their protest by moving their heavy farming vehicles from the fields to the main motorways and border crossings, which stop traffic in the EU. And higher production costs, climate conditions, and the Green Deal requirements that they have there have really put a bind on all the farmers, and including grape growers and all that. So when I say farmers, I always think of the grape growers. So there has been protests recently in Poland, Greece, Ireland, Germany, and Lithuania. Even Ireland. They're still in the EU, I think, aren't they? Or are they? I don't know. I know Britain withdrew, but did Ireland? I don't know, Mike. Do you have an answer to that?
Parliamentary Republic of 26 countries. I'm going back to my memory.
Like an Alexa, your brain.
I became a member of the EU. Oh, United Nations. Anyway, so, gosh, where would they be? Ireland, EU. There's a lot of stories about it. It says Ireland, EU member since January 1973.
So
they're still in it, yeah.
Okay. They were talking about getting out, I think, when England got out. When England got out, they were talking about getting out, but I didn't know if they did or not. Huh? They didn't, I guess. So a lot of stuff going on over in the EU. Farmers protesting the new rules and regulations that are coming out. They've barricaded highways, started fires on highways, and they've taken their tractors and pulled out onto the roads, and so you can't bypass them by going on other roads because they've got fires going on the roads, and the tractors are all plugging the roads, and it's just a nasty situation. Let's see, this was just February the 6th, and that was 2 days ago. They had this big protest here where they're putting fires on the roads and stuff. So it's a serious problem, serious thing over there. English viticulture looks to a robotic future. England is starting to work robotics into vineyards and stuff. And I've seen a lot of comments and posts about that, the using robotics to clean or mow the vineyards, using robotics to trim some of the stuff anytime they can get by with it, where they don't have to have a person actually eye it. And in a lot of the areas, they can do it with the person or without the person having to eye it. So that's England is starting to do that now. Okay, let's find something else here. One more. Gee, we're almost done. We can do one more. The flaw that permanently killed some of the wine, the world's finest white wines. Fraud inspectors hit French wine stores looking for fraud wine. And let's see, regenerative certifications are booming right now. Regenerative certifications. Are they worth it? It says on this article. The article says the rise of regenerative agriculture. What does regenerative certification mean? We've talked about regenerative certification, so I'm not going to go into that. And toughing out the transition, the move towards certification. And let me see, the bottom line here says, I'm going to change the world with 100 acres, but we show others it's feasible for a successful business. Yes, is worth it, what they're saying overall. Regenerative organic certified, she said, because the word sustainability is so watered down now. So regenerative organic certified is taking over sustainability in a lot of the wineries. I can see her point. Everything is sustainable. What does it say here about it? Such as, just because a vineyard claims to be regenerative and uses some principles, such as cover crops and permanent vegetation coverage, doesn't mean it doesn't use herbicides like glyphosate, which is Roundup, to manage weeds under the vines. Regenerative agriculture is a broad term at the moment. A lot of wineries and producers are distorting the definition to meet their own needs. Whoa! So, regenerative is good to have, but if you follow the proper rules. And I guess there's no oversight. Napa is looking at doing a ban. Yes, they have done a ban on Roundup or glyphosate. I say Roundup, that's the brand name, but glyphosate is the actual chemical. And it doesn't have to be Roundup. You can buy a big jug of glyphosate and just mix it yourself, which is not a problem. Most wineries do that. So Let's see, this is interesting. Studies have shown that a 1% increase in organic matter in an acre of soil will hold an additional 20,000 gallons of water. Oh my gosh. Think of how much water you can store from the rain, especially as the climate changes and more droughts come on. 20,000 gallons of water for a 1% increase in organic matter on an acre. That is staggering. So, it looks like there's another label we can be leery of. Maybe, maybe not. It's some people are doing the regenerative organic rules right to the edge without really having an oversight. So be careful with that now, I guess, until they have. I thought they had some pretty strict rules on that, though. But according to this article, no. Same thing with sustainability. Sustainability, is this article is saying, is quite watered down now. So, you know, it's like everything else, buyer beware. There always seems to be people who are trying to get around doing the real thing and trying to get past it as best they can. So, all right, I'll stop there. I apologize for not being more prepared tonight, but I thought I had a guess. And
I mean, for spur of the moment, that you did exceptional.
Thank you.
Gosh, fantastic. So, and we got an hour's worth. We'll make a little bit later, less, because we did kind of start off with
sort of, you know, chit-chatted because. You know, the show started before we were done chit-chatting. You know, that's what happened.
That's true. Yeah. And we start before and start talking and it, oh, well, anyway. But so I believe we have a guest next week.
We do.
Is it next week?
Yes. In fact, we have a guest for the next 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So,
we will... enjoy that as well.
And
be sure to tune in.
We did not. We have not talked to Grant Reynolds, the author of The Wine List. I was looking back on our studio and looking at the different stuff on studio, and went back 3 weeks or 4 weeks ago and. It was listed as Grant Reynolds. We didn't talk to him. He canceled on us. He had something come up. And so we haven't talked to Grant Reynolds yet. So he should be coming up before very long here also. Looking forward to talking to him. But I was looking. One show peaked right around that time. And I went back to try to figure out what it was, and it said Grant Reynolds, but I don't think so, because we didn't talk with him, so I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm confused.
Yeah. I'll have to check those, the show. I think it might have, it looks like it might have saved that, but no, he was not on.
No, okay.
I'll have to fix that.
Yeah, it's so confusing.
Next week is a guest, and we'll fill you in on that. And 7 p.m. Eastern Time is showtime, so please join us next Thursday for a guest again, and like you said, for the next week. So check it out.
I'm getting someone who's sending me a thing to be a guest on the show, but it's in French. And I can't get it to translate to English. I don't know who it is or what it is, but it's in French.
Oh, no.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
What is the limit? Yeah, I just I was going through this mm-hmm. and checking the gas coming up, and I noticed that they sent another one, and I wrote back
wow.
to them and I said I do not speak French, and they sent it to me again in French. So I don't know.
Are you sure they're asking to be on, or is it a scammer or something? I don't know.
It says All About Wine podcast. I don't know. I'll follow up on it more here.
Yeah, we'll see what
we'll find out.
Join us next week. And Bo, too, you just joined chat. A little late. Sorry about that. The show is signing off.
Who we got next week? I don't have it in front of me here.
I did. Oh, gosh. I was just looking at in my email here. I have to go through to Florida States. On February 15th, we will have... Stephen, is it?
Is it? I don't know.
Sure.
Stephen
Kesklins.
My problem is all of my guests are listed under the people who book them. They don't book
mm-hmm.
themselves. They always have a publicist or something that books them. Emails here are under that person's name, and I have to look in the body of each one to see if it's the person I want. Oh, geez.
It's Stephen J. Stephen, and I don't know how to say the last name.
Oh, okay, okay. I know. He's our – that's why he's not here. He emailed me on my not on the All About Wine list, but he emailed me on the on my personal email. J. Stevens Castellus or something. Yeah, yeah. He is a expert in American grapes, and he's got himself a vineyard, and he's done experiments, and he's taught all over. He's going to be very interesting. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
It should be a very author, and he's written mm-hmm. articles and all sorts of stuff. So it should be a really good show. So tune in next week and check him out. Or if you miss it live, then tune in on Flightline Radio at noon on Saturday, and then listen
Saturday,
to the show all the time. Yeah, so
it's also on Facebook, so you can go to the Facebook page and scroll until you find the video part of it. It's scrolling images and put your thing down at the bottom. But
or even Blog Talk Radio, you can listen to the archives or any other platform that we're on. We're on a lot of other platforms which we have no idea what they are. Yeah,
that's true. That's one of the funny things about this. We have no idea. Have a great weekend. A great weekend, and we'll talk to y'all next Thursday. Thanks again.
Have a good week. Thanks for listening. Be safe.
Thank you.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About
Wine. All About Wine.
All About Wine. Stop that. All right.
Oh, come on. I clicked on you. Go there.